So a while back, I read this book, White Flight, Black Flight, The Dynamics of Racial Change in an American Neighborhood by Raquel A. Waldorf. Waldorf is an academic at Cornell University. She looks at a town called Parkmont. Now, that's not the real name of this town. We know it's somewhere in the northeast of the United States. Apparently, it's a convention in sociology to use a pseudonym to protect the identities of the people that she interviews, and also to get more honest answers from the research. Parkmont was a working class town in the 1940s, which had a large Jewish population and was known locally as Little Tel Aviv or Kike's Peak. That's what the Catholic people called it. It was only 2% black in 1990, but by 2000, it was over 58.8% black with very few whites. Now, Parkmont did not have its own school, and the local population, including the Jewish population, would send their kids to a nearby school called Wynn Hill. It was a bus ride away, and they were perfectly happy to do this. But then in the 1960s, the black population in the surrounding areas began to grow rapidly, and the Jewish community in Parkmont responded by lobbying the local government to establish a new school called Lombard. And they were successful in this. Lombard was built, and most of the pupils were Jewish. And the children from Parkmont could now go to Lombard, and the black kids were kept out because they were, of course, outside the catchment area and they could not afford to move to Parkmont. Now, Parkmont in the 1960s was a destination for other groups to go to. Non-Jews, known to Jews as Gentiles, became a presence in the area. The newcomers were mostly first and second generation Italians, with some Irish also. Parkmont was seen as high status to these groups, and the school, the brand new school, what was it called? Lombard. This was seen as the main attraction. And I will quote Waldorf at some length on this. She says, "The large segment of working class Jewish families who remained in Parkmont learned to tolerate and in some cases embrace the Italian and Irish goyim. After all, Jewishness continued to dominate Parkmont's reputation, power structure, institutions, and cultural life. Parkmont residents were far more threatened by the black population that had crowded into the neighborhoods located just a few miles away. Like most of the city's whites, Parkmont residents were cognizant of the possibility of black encroachment. Everyone knew someone whose neighborhood had changed over. However, families in Parkmont took comfort in the fact that their community had remained solidly white. They felt protected in their defended community, which was characterized by strong leadership and involved residents. In addition, they knew that the houses in their neighborhood were unaffordable or inaccessible to blacks. Like so many white ethnic working class areas, Parkmont had an unwritten code that prevented blacks from finding any affordable homes that might be for sale. Lawn signs were banned. As one elderly stayer said of such signs, one time somebody put up a sign, and the next night there was no sign. Somebody took it off. This informal, no-sign policy helped to stave off racial change for a long time because blacks could not simply drive around and find homes for sale. Additionally, realtors knew that if they showed Parkmont homes to black families, they risked alienating white residents and sabotaging their own earnings and careers. Thus, Parkmont residents felt secure in their certainty that their neighborhood would remain unchanged despite the shift in surrounding communities. However, in the 1960s, the county that Parkmont was in instituted a busing policy to promote racial integration. Of course, this had already started earlier in the 1950s, but now this new school that they had built, Lombard, came under the new policy, and black pupils were now admitted to Lombard, and it failed to remain a white-only school. Of course, the Parkmont parents lobbied against this, but on this occasion they failed. The Parkmont population responded by removing their children from the schools and sending them either to Jewish day schools or Catholic day schools, depending on the family. Thus, by the 1980s, Parkmont had become a majority black school. Even though the black families weren't living in Parkmont at this point, the children were living elsewhere and then being bussed in. So after the Lombard school became integrated, Parkmont began to experience white flight. The first people to move away from the area were Jewish families who sought out other neighborhoods known for having a significant Jewish presence. Many of these were younger families with school-age children, so you can see that they were moving because of the school. The exodus opened up the Parkmont housing market to black families for the first time, and the change in the town was rapid. One new black Parkmont resident reminisces about this. They say, "Let me tell you something. Black people say to me, they'll say, you know, our neighborhood changed. And I'll say, yeah, it's changed as far as being a white neighborhood to being a black neighborhood. It changed. And this is something that I've said. It was just like the plague was coming. Like once the blacks started buying, it's like the plague. When we came up here, it was nothing to have 10 or 12 for sale signs for a block. Whites didn't want to live around us, so they left. They were out of here. It was like, we gotta go, we gotta go. As houses were going for sale all over the place, I told my husband one time, I'm like, damn, you know, we went to sleep and we woke up and the whole neighborhood is black. We didn't used to see that many blacks. It's like we went to sleep in the winter and it changed just that quick." Now, people cited three main reasons for leaving. One is just simple racial prejudice and discrimination, although Waldorf is at pains to point out that this was only a very small minority of cases and she couldn't actually find any. Then the second reasons that people gave is what Waldorf calls non-racial factors, such as crime, schools, services, and property values that, quote, often coincide with racial change. And the third reason is simply that the housing needs of a family has changed. So that's either people scaling up or scaling down. So let's say you have a family with one child who live in a two-bedroom house. Now they need to move to a three-bedroom house. Or vice versa, you have an older family whose kids have grown up and now they want to move into a smaller accommodation. So these are normal reasons that people move. But it's actually this second factor, the non-racial factors, that Waldorf focuses most of the study on, and that's what I'm going to be spending the rest of this video on as well. Now, house prices fell in Parkmont because the total number of residents decreased over time. You can see the total population in 1970 was 9,313. This, by 2000, had gone to 7,768. And you can see that as those white residents moved out, there weren't as many black residents moving in to replace them. Also, the demographic changes are extraordinary. The percentage of black people in 1990 was 2.2. By 2000, it's 58.8. The white percentage was 99.6 back in 1970. That went down to 33.2 by 2000. And if you have a look, most of the black people were in owner-occupied homes. The percentage of black home owner-occupied residences was 73.7 by the year 2000. So most of these people that we're reading about were home owners eventually. Now, three types of Parkmont residents left. So basically, after all of after the white exodus, we've got these three different types of residents who are left in Parkmont. The first group are what Waldorf calls elderly stayers. That's older Jewish and white people who felt too settled to move, or for whatever reason they didn't move away. The second group are pioneers. That's the first black residents to move to Parkmont. And then the third group are the second waivers. That's the black residents who moved in after most of the Jewish and the white exodus had already taken place. Now, one of the interesting things that Waldorf finds is that the original population taught the pioneers how to integrate into the community and its social norms. Parkmont had a lot of very well-established social norms. For example, at one day a week was trash day. That was when the bins were meant to be put out and taken away. Everybody was expected to mow their lawns. Everybody was expected to paint their fences and their gates. In the winter, people were expected to shovel the snow. They were also told where to vote. However, by the time most of the original population had left, a lot of these social norms went by the wayside. Established local businesses and stores closed down, and attempts to replace them struggled. Many residents expressed unhappiness with the quality and the stability of the new local stores and restaurants after their poor, and also complained about their poor and shabby decor. We saw overflowing trash frequently near bus stops. Old businesses now had ugly security bars instead of their nice old storefronts. While some lawns are still neatly manicured, others have garbage strewn on the grass in the form of Chinese takeout, advertisements, candy wrappers, and discarded cups. It is common to see homes that show signs of age with old, broken, or worn-out doors, peeling paint, bare lawns, cracked cement, and rusted railings along the front stairs. And often found on the doorsteps of homes are dirty, faded outlines of mezuzahs, that is, Jewish ornaments containing scripture, which symbolize that the house was once owned by somebody of Jewish heritage. And it is frequent to see houses that are boarded up or one that is abandoned and surrounded by tall weeds. But these kinds of homes are not yet the norm. So you can very much see a neighborhood in chronic decline just 10 years after these changes have taken place. Now, one of the reasons that Waldorf points to is that while the pioneers learned to adopt the old social norms and integrate it into them, they failed to pass these on to the second waivers, who did not show them any respect. As soon as the pioneers learned of what was going to happen with their neighborhood, they also moved away, and so Parkmont experienced what is known as black flight following the white flight. So the original black migrants to the area now wanted to move out because the neighborhood's gone down. One pioneer, aged 37, who had moved to the area when she was in her 20s, said, "Before, you didn't really have to go outside your home and sweep up trash. You just had to go and do your leaves and a little litter, but now it's McDonald's papers, it's cups, it's whatever. Now we have a Popeyes coming." And for British viewers, I believe Popeyes is a kind of fried chicken fast food establishment that they have in some parts of America. Waldorf contrasts between the pioneers and the second waivers. Anne Jackson, who is a pioneer, sums up the principal split well. She says, "When we came here and wanted to be accepted, it was mostly a white neighborhood. We came in and we had no problems. We didn't want to cause any problems. We just wanted to work, take care of the home, fix it up, live and be happy. The new people that came up here didn't care as much. The first group that came up here, we tried to fit in. We did as everybody else did. We didn't throw stuff around when we came in. We would get out and we'd sweep up the front of our house and clean up to keep it the way it was." And the reason for this is that the pioneers moved for aspirational and what Waldorf calls assimilationist reasons. They sought to integrate with the dominant group as an ethnic minority, respecting the fact that the white majority population had a certain way of doing things. Whereas when the second waivers came in, they saw themselves moving to a black neighborhood and were neither interested nor able to merge into the pioneers' cultural milieu, reflecting a more general lack of assimilationist values that goes beyond race, according to Waldorf. And now this is George. He is another one of the pioneers. He says, now when Joanne, who was a white stayer, and then was over here, we didn't have too much of a problem because they stayed on top of it. Mr. Henry, he stayed on them. He'd be knocking on the door. You get that abandoned car off the block. He'd call somebody to get it off the street. And now this is Waldorf talking. She says, I suggested to George that some black residents might resent such interventions from white stayers, taking offence at comments that could be perceived as racist, insulting or judgmental. I said that I thought it might rub black neighbours the wrong way. However, George adamantly rejected this insinuation. No, he said, they was rubbing us the right way. The right way. As soon as they left, you got all this trash back here and nothing but abandoned cars in the driveway. And that's very interesting that George reacted at the insinuation of racism in that manner. Now, this is George's daughter, Sonia McCall. And she says, it's horrible. I've seen it over the years, how the neighborhood has changed. When I moved up here, it was real quiet. You didn't see no boys in the corner. You didn't have all this activity. I think the problem is that when people was moving in, they brought their sons, kids, and a lot of parents. They think just as long as the kids don't mess up the house, the kids can stay out. They out on the street. I believe it's going to get worse because the kids are growing up and they coming in, bringing in more kids. And they got no control over them. The neighborhood's going to go down, says Sonia McCall. And this is a final account from Nina Jones, another pioneer. Nina is a teacher, apparently. She says, right now, we're trying to move. One of my girlfriends wants to move up here, but she's single. I don't recommend it for people who want children or who have children. I don't recommend it because you want an area where, number one, the kids can be outside and play. You just never know what's going to jump off here. The neighborhood is failing. And if it's like this now, what's it going to be like in 10 years from now? And I think that's very interesting what she says about the kids. And Nina Jones is a teacher in Lamont School, the original reason for all of these people moving to this area. And it just goes to show that things can change very rapidly. And that's all I wanted to share in this video. I thought some of these findings from Waldorf were interesting. You can make of them what you will, but it's quite a nice reality check. Now get out.